Once again from Tuscaloosa, it is another exciting episode of the Alabama Frozen Hour. We get to formally introduce one of our amazing other co-hosts.
I'm looking at the wrong camera. I forgot what we were looking at.
I was looking right there,
and I glanced at you, and everybody on you.
5 seconds. That's all it took.
Hey, that's a good blooper. It's a good blooper.
Apologize.
Already freaking high. I love it.
This is like the, I forget which kid movie is like, where do we go from here?
I'm going to lose my chair.
All right. Tuscaloosa, another exciting episode of the Alabama Frozen Hour is set to be in full swing. We will introduce one of our co-hosts who is going to be rotating throughout the rest of the season, and we've got a special guest who's one of the many fearless leaders of the Alabama women's hockey team. Welcome to everyone watching or listening around the world. I'm Spencer Tomsett. Preston McElhaney joins us, as well as our additional co-host here, Kate Atchison. Hannah Alpern is out for today. That's not how it is. Okay. Well, the important thing is that I've been corrected on that.
I'm like, I don't want to interrupt your flow. You're killing it.
No, you're good.
That is not exactly.
Oh, no, you're good. It's Atchison. All right, perfect. Well, Kate Atchison, again, I always tell people, once they give me the correct pronunciation, then we're good. If until then, I go with whatever's pronounced.
You are just fine.
Anyways,
Kate
Atchison. We'll be speaking with Kira Duffany in just a little bit. Proud to be with you in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, here in Reese Pfeiffer Hall in the backdrop of the Cathedral of College Football, and should be special. Now, Kate was set to be on the podcast in the first couple of weeks, and a lot of different things happened behind the scenes that couldn't bring you here, but the important thing is we have you with us now, and she's been our camera operator for the first couple of home broadcasts for the Black Dog hockey coverage that we've done, and sure, you can attest, Preston, one of the harder working people on the team, especially.
Absolutely.
And you know, in her case, we talked about getting to more of those on-air roles and those things, and we tried to get her on the show and tried to get her on the scenes, and it just hasn't worked out. But now she's here with us. So, Ms. Atchison, we appreciate you being here with us.
Of course.
And to make sure that you have the same opportunity that Hannah and Preston did earlier, to quote our colleague Ian Eagle, you could talk to 100 different broadcasters or sports media professionals about their journey and how they've gotten to where they are today, and you would get 100 different answers. So what has the journey been like for you from the moment you knew you wanted to be in broadcasting to now being synonymous with the women's hockey team?
Absolutely. You know, that may be one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard, because it is the truest quote I've ever heard. I have had every single path is unique. Mine is a little extra unique because I graduated high school with my associate's degree in pre-med, and that was the plan. That was the plan for a long time. And then I decided that I need to go into something that made me feel alive. I wasn't just interested. It wasn't just a good job. It made me feel alive. And so I reevaluated what I wanted to do, made a last minute switch from pre-med at Baylor University, fun fact, from pre-med all the way over to the University of Alabama to study sports media. So now I am here. I am graduating this next semester, and I have just spent my entire time at Alabama, feet on the ground running, trying to learn every single thing I can, because I've been an avid sports fan my whole life, specifically an avid hockey fan. I'm from Canada originally, and so just, I have been here, I've been learning, and this is the first time I'm learning the behind the scenes of the sports scene, and I'm just exhilarated to be here.
So, if I do Sic'em Bears, that means nothing to you,
right? It does not. I'm actually a hater. I actually am kind of a Baylor hater, so.
And I remember you mentioned as well, you're primarily based out of Salt Lake City, which a lot of excitement as we're recording this episode. Last night was their first ever hockey game in
existence.
So, what was it like seeing that, even though you weren't in the crowd or in the city? What was it like seeing that?
My face looked exactly like this the whole time. Like, I was just watching. And I was so excited. It was history being made. One of my most valued mentors, Andrea Urban, was there in the thick of it, and she was filming and broadcasting and covering and doing all sorts of things, has been a big part of it. So I've gotten to hear a lot of the inside scoop of what's going on behind the scenes, and it is just a brand new area that has never had growing up in Utah. It's cold. There's a lot of skiing. There's a lot of snowboarding. There's a lot of ice skating. There's not a lot of hockey. I barely knew anybody that played hockey. It's more of a football state. And so this is brand new and people are pumped. And it was the best thing ever watching that game.
Yeah, it's perfect. I caught a little bit of bits and pieces last night. It was more focused on the NLDS on the baseball side of things, but caught some pieces of it. Saw Ms. Urban on on her element and everything with doing the reporting and seeing the players walk into the stadium and everything. So that part was fun. But and anyways, to make sure we don't get too derailed, even though it's great, especially with the hockey scene and the NHL back in full swing, it's fantastic in that regard. But great to have you with us. Kate will be rotating in between with Hannah and Preston and everything throughout the podcast, throughout the season. But we're privileged to be joined by not Kiera, it's Kira, not Dufanny, it's Duffany. Yes. I apologize again to Joanne, Brian, Katie, Kylie, and Sean for disrespecting the family legacy on getting those. It was actually the men's hockey team was watching the broadcast, like one of the first two, and Savannah came back up to me and was like, yeah, it's Duffany. I was like, okay, I know now. I know I should have done a pronunciation guide to start the season and everything, but anyways, Kira Duffany joins us, captain for the women's ice hockey team here at Alabama, the club president with the club team technically being a student organization and everything. And you know, I remember we were on the bus, stopped at some gas station on the way back in Georgia, and we're going to get Mia Perez on the show at some point, but I asked her, Mia, are you able to come on the show? And she said, well, I'm actually out of town. Savannah overhears me and says, you should get players on the podcast. I'm like, well, you got any recommendations? She goes, I don't know. She gave the suggestion. She didn't want to give the implementation on it. But we love Savannah. And then the other player said, you got to get Kira on the show. You got to get her. And came on the bus and was like, hey, Kira, you busy on Wednesday? She's like, I actually don't have class today. So it went perfectly. So we appreciate you taking the time. Certainly, especially with your busy schedule and having to, you know, essentially lead the team on multiple facets. I know we were talking about a lot of the funding things behind the scenes before we started recording everything, but Kira, really appreciate you taking the time and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for the shout out to my whole family. I really all appreciate it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
All my siblings too. I wasn't expecting that.
Oh yeah.
Every single one.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And so I find it interesting. So similar to paraphrase what I was telling Kate earlier about how everyone's journey is different, I feel like you could do the same with hockey players or even students here at Alabama and talk about how their journeys are different. You would get probably 100 different answers on those things. So for Kira Duffany, what has the journey been like from the moment you had an idea of what it was you wanted to do long term to now being one of the leaders for the women's hockey team?
Well, funny enough, I had wanted to play college hockey for the longest time. Like growing up, I played hockey for 12 years since I was 6 years old. And it was always a big dream of mine. And then when I was in high school, I kind of decided against it, thought I was done. So then I came here to the South, you know, didn't think anything about hockey. And then sophomore year here, Savannah reached out to me because she was the head of interns for the D2 hockey team at the time. And she was like, I know you like hockey. Like, do you want to be an intern? So I said, sure, why not? I did it. And I did what you're doing. I did the broadcasting stuff. Mm-hmm. So I got to travel with the team. I got to know the coaches a little bit. And their head coach had mentioned to me and Savannah something about, like, we should start the women's hockey team.
Sure.
So we looked at each other. We were like, why not? What's the worst that could happen?
That is the most Savannah and career answer I've ever heard in my entire life.
We were literally just like, why not? Like, I didn't realize how much I missed playing hockey until I started working for the men's team. And so when they brought that up, in my head, I didn't think anything about starting women's team. I didn't know that was an option.
Right.
And then we started looking into it. We talked to the commissioner of College Hockey South, and he said that they would love to help us in any way because Georgia had a team, Auburn had a team, and they're really trying to expand women's hockey
right.
in the South. And then the former vice president of Georgia's women's hockey team reached out to me and also said that they would be willing to do anything to help us out. And that was kind of how everything got jump-started. So then Savannah and I started looking into how to start a club here and getting involved with, like, club rec sports. And so all of, like, last year, we went through the whole process of starting a club. We brought along Morgan and Tegan to be kind of the exec. And then we became approved, and now the goal is just to dominate, I think.
I love that. Yeah. That Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good. The one thing I do want to hook on, because especially us three as members of the media. Now, first off, have you listened to any of the other episodes of the podcast?
I've seen clips.
Okay. So just to make sure you know, I think it was last week's episode we were talking to Savannah, or at least Hannah and I were, and it came up that she mentioned that you are part of the broadcast team and she reached out to you. And I looked over at Hannah and said, "What? I want to work with Kira on a broadcast and call games." And I said, the only way that would happen is if she got injured. I was not speaking that into existence.
I knocked on wood.
I said, we do not wish for that or anything. But I wanted to make sure, because especially for you playing hockey in the high school level and everything, it's that, look, Preston's great. I love calling games with this guy, especially the pop culture references that he has. But certainly there's just a different depth that comes to that that side when you're an analyst and actually have played the game before. So what was that like for you to be able to call hockey games during your time here at the Capstone?
It was fun. It was definitely a weird start because I'm not like a broadcasting or sports media, any type of major. I'm kinesiology. I want to do physical therapy. So when Savannah said, "You're the only intern that understands hockey, will you please do this?" I was like, I can't say no, but my first couple games were definitely rough because I had never been on the mic like trying to do like watch the games and actually call everything. So I just tried to think back to like all the Red Wings games that I'd watched growing up and like Mickey Redmond and Ken Daniels, just all of them, everything that they would say, and I was trying to channel like my inner NHL broadcaster I was doing that.
Well, I think that's so funny to hear because that is quite literally to a T exactly how I want to go. Oh, I just hit my mic. Sorry, I want to go into broadcasting, or even writing, or whatever I do. That's exactly how I learn. Is I go behind the camera, or I sit in my room and I broadcast to an empty screen, or when I am doing something, I'm just thinking back to the multitudes of games we as sports fans have all watched. And I think you being able to do that, and also just again the way that you guys, well, why not do it, that speaks so much to any of y'all that don't know these wonderful ladies that started this program are probably the biggest go-getters I've ever met in my entire life. And the ability to just, not even confidence, just the almost like childlike confidence, like, what, yeah, why not, let's do it, like, that is insanely impressive. And you guys are killing it. You guys are dominating so far. Like, killing it.
Thank you. I think in my head too, everything, I've just been kind of like, what's the worst that can happen? Like, I could try to start the team. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But no, it did. Yeah. If we're not good, we're not good. But we are.
Exactly. I love it. Great mindset.
Yeah.
Now, Preston, you have a golden opportunity here because you're the analyst for our Black Dog Hockey broadcast. You might want to ask her for some tips or some sort of, like, insights or anything. So you should probably use this time very well.
Absolutely. So in instances like the Georgia game, when you're up by so many points, what do you normally do as an analyst besides, you know, saying things like Baba Booey into the microphone? You know, because you just
at some point.
Did you really say Baba Booey?
Yes, okay, so when you're up by that much, I'm trying to figure out, okay, what do I do to keep this going besides going, wow, what a shot, wow, what a shot, wow, what a shot. So it's like, what do you do in that situation?
I guess, well, with the men's teams, they didn't have a lot of games where they were up by that many goals. All love to them, but their games
not throwing been, shade, just no being shade, factual.
No shade, but I don't recall any 15-2 games in their season that I went to. But, I mean, I guess you can just try to imagine what's going on in our heads. Like, I can tell you, once we do get up, like, to a certain amount of goals, I try to tell everyone, everybody has to touch the puck before we score. That's something that I try to like implement just so that we can kind of improve ourselves like in that game, work on like our passing and cycling and moving the puck. So I guess you could just try to imagine what's in our heads as we're making a play. Why are we doing that, you know?
So essentially in the back of your mind, think, what would Duffany do?
No way. Yeah.
What would Rzabowski do? Or what would any of them do in that regard? So certainly with what you've talked about getting certain systems and protocols and things in play. And one of the things I like to do whenever I'm doing podcast interviews is I do a deep dive on either people's social media or LinkedIn or profiles and such. So you've certainly been in systems and protocols because you had you've had a decent amount of experience in food service, including American Banquet, as well as Brown Dog Parlor. Well, hey, I'm going my way. She was talking about, she didn't update her LinkedIn, so there were only like three jobs.
Yeah, you have like my high school jobs, the Italian American.
Oh, those are high school. Back down the memory books.
The Italian American Banquet Center was my first job ever when I was 16.
I can't do that.
I mean, I have other serving experience. I worked at a country club the past two summers, if you want to talk about that.
Let's talk about the country club.
On her LinkedIn, we're connected on there. So it's not, I just look at what's publicly on there. That's not a problem.
No, we're friends.
Oh, yeah. So it's, no, but the reason I ask is because certainly, and I've talked with Coach Laxton and Coach Davis, as well as Reniger, about this and how their kind of goal for this first year is to set systems in place and to set protocols and certain elements of that. This is the standard we want to uphold. This is what we want the team to be in that regard. And I feel like, especially not just from those roles, but from the country club and other jobs that you've had throughout your time, is that you've learned as well. So as captain of the women's hockey team, what do you feel that your role is for establishing protocols and responsibilities in that regard, or systems in place? How do you feel you fit in that?
I feel like I fit in a big part. I think it's a big discussion between me and the other captains and the coaches with how we want to go about like how this team is being run and the systems we have in place. But yeah, hold on, I'm trying to think. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's fair.
I didn't know what questions to prepare for, but I mean,
That's what we like to do on the podcast. It's always just free flow, these two roasting me. And I'm sure Hannah will be roasting me in the next episode of the podcast or something like that. But, you know, we talked as well with Savannah about it, where I asked her, how do you define success? And she also had to think about it and had to rephrase certain things. But I guess part of that as well is certainly wins and losses are the standard of, you know, wins are clearly we're doing something right, and losses, we have some things that are going wrong in that regard. So beyond the wins losses column, when you get to the end of a game or you get to the end of a period or some section or even a practice, what in your mind tells you, you know what, I've done my job right?
I just feel like seeing everybody else's reactions to things, just kind of seeing how everybody else is feeling. I feel like if everybody feels like we're on the same page, everyone is happy with their performance, and I'm pretty happy. I don't want girls to be like too hard on themselves, and sometimes that can happen. Like we have a rough period or a rough practice or something, but if everybody's upbeat, kind of, I guess, if everyone's pretty satisfied with how their game is going, then I'm pretty satisfied.
Yeah, and how do y'all manage that behind the scenes? What kind of like psychological work and mental work as a team do you put in to have a strong but kind on yourself mindset?
I think us just having such a good connection as a team, this has genuinely been like one of the most fun teams I've ever been on, and everybody gets along, there's no drama, and I feel like that has a big part to do with us kind of hyping each other up and like supporting each other, which makes it a lot easier for everybody to go out there and give it their best.
That is huge. Please tell us more about, because I've noticed even just from the social media, you can tell from the social media posts, whether it's your personal or even on the actual Alabama women's hockey social media posts, you can tell you guys are just best friends. Mm-hmm. Do you have any stories, or what has that been like cultivating that relationship with everybody?
It's been fun. I think part of the reason why it's been so easy for us to become such close friends is that obviously we take this very seriously, but I think a lot of us grew up playing very serious, like competitive hockey, and it is competitive now, but we're all here for the same reason, to have fun.
Right.
And so I think that's everybody's number one priority, is just like focusing on like having a good time, playing the sport that we love. Because I actually quit hockey in high school just because it like
As a lot of girls did,
so that's like, I wanted to be able to like create something where we're all having fun. So I feel like that's been a big part of why this team has been such good friends.
You get absolutely relays on the ice.
I'll go ahead.
Oh, no. Excuse me. No. I got to kind of ask, like, what is the mindset going into games? Like, when you're in South Carolina and, you know, you're on the road for so long, what is kind of the mentality? You're getting straight off the bus. You know, you're waking up super early to get there. And it's like, oh, well, we have a game now. You know, what's kind of the general feeling going into that?
The feeling, honestly, going into it was just play our game, like, calm down. I always tell girls, especially, like, if we start to, like, struggle controlling the puck, I'm just like, take a breath, calm down. Like, we know how we play. And that's kind of what the coaches relayed to us before the game, too. They really don't have much to say other than, we play our game, we know what to do, just go out there and play how you know how to play.
Right.
So to backtrack a little bit, and we'll talk about the South Carolina series in a second, but okay. I remember talking with the coaching staff right before your games against High Point University. Mm-hmm. And we also talked with Savannah about this last week as well, on how there wasn't necessarily a feeling of the team being battle-tested yet. Because even with the preseason games, it was mostly 20-point leads or even minimum 5-goal leads in that regard. Mm-hmm. But against High Point, I mean, you guys were leading the majority of that 2-weekend series, and certainly with their freshman Hannah Frost, who was incredible skating down the ice, especially when she got frustrated.
Yeah.
She was able to score and get into different positions to get the puck on the net, but it felt more like we saw what this team was capable of against High Point University, and you made a stick. Tell me if you feel the same way on this, but I feel like that was almost a statement of, it's not just that we haven't faced strengthened teams, it's that we know what we're capable of, and it seemed to be on full display against the High Point Panthers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think going into it, some girls were a little bit nervous because they were like, this is going to be a tough game, I think. And obviously, like you said, like last times that we had played Georgia and Auburn, there was like a lead limit where we weren't allowed to score mm-hmm. that many goals, or we beat them by 15 or 20 or whatever it was. So I think some girls were nervous going into it. And not because we really doubted ourselves, just because we hadn't had that experience as a team playing someone on a similar level, I guess. And so it was really fun to be able to go out there, especially like to be able to score right off the bat in the first game. That was definitely a big motivator, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, like we saw, okay, like we got this, we can still hold our own. And I think as the game went on, it really just like boosted everybody's confidence. And I think it showed everybody that like, we are a force to be reckoned with. Like, it's not just the certain teams we're playing. It's no matter what, we will go out and we will perform.
You were stressed out to all get out during that High Point series. Like, we can't. I mean, he kind of was too. Like, I think all of us on the press stand were, because I mean, the first game, it was, you guys were in command for the most part, and you start getting down deeper into the game, you start getting a feel of, okay, it seems like it's going to go down this way, or it looks like. High Point just doesn't have an answer. And then they start rallying back and they start getting goals and get it into within one. And Preston and I are looking at each other saying, I don't know what's going to happen here. If this goes to overtime, I don't know if the girls are gassed or if it's just that High Point is putting into another gear. But especially the second game, it was probably some of the best women's collegiate ice hockey I've seen in a long time. Especially because when you have those low-scoring games, it almost felt like an NHL-level game in that second game.
You think so?
I really do. Not just from the low-scoring, but the intensity that I saw from there, the passes back and forth. And I could tell you're stressed.
That's what I was
going to
say. So it was absolutely a game where I love all levels of hockey, but the best level of hockey is the highest, fastest, most aggressive level of hockey. It doesn't matter mm-hmm. who's playing, it doesn't matter how old you are, what gender you are, the best hockey is those that go in with grit and are aggressive, and it's great. Mm-hmm. And I like that's what I also like. I love the violence of hockey. Everyone who likes hockey is a huge violence fan, guys.
Yeah.
And so I love to see it. And so anywho, that first game, I pride myself in being pretty good at being able to read teams' gameplay, and you never know what someone's thinking out there. But you can tell who has control and which players. And I pride myself in being able to read that. And after the first game, I felt like I had a pretty good grasp on what this team had to offer, but also how the next game, we talked about the whole car ride home.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just yapping. And then the next game I went, and it started off how I expected it to. And then I expected them to come back. And then it was going how I expected it to. And then it flipped. And all of a sudden, I was stressed. I was like, oh, my gosh. And that's nothing to say that you guys played worse than I thought or they played better even. It was just a higher, faster level of hockey than I had seen because the season's getting deeper. And me and Perez, I was holding the camera. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like trying not to shake. I was like looking over our producer, Annie. I was like, I'm tracking this. Oh, my God.
Those are more fun though. No.
It was so much fun.
Even just like playing, like those
always.
Games were so fun. I kept telling their captain after both games, I was like, that was so much fun.
Oh, good. Yeah.
To further elaborate on that, like, I don't know, of the four games that me and you have done, I feel like the High Point series was really the only one, especially that second game, where I was like jumping out of my seat to make a call, because it was like when we're scoring goals, you know, near the end of the game, and it's like, oh, we broke the tie, you know, it's...
No, it was both.
I mean, that's me on the bench. Like, you should see me. If I'm on the bench when we score, I'm jumping up and down.
Oh,
my
we see like cameras on you.
That's him in any Alabama football game, too.
Like, absolutely. But see, I'm glad the hockey bug has bit me, because now I can, you know, excitingly jump out of my seat over an Alabama score.
And that's a challenge, too, is on, at least from a play-by-play perspective, you have to be, you can't, especially, you know, if you're team broadcasters, you certainly have excitement when stuff comes to that. But you have to try and be careful about still, especially when there's a game-winning goal or there's a tie-breaking goal or something that breaks, lack of a better term, breaks the ice, you have to put yourself in a position. I know you laughed at that one, but you have to put yourself in a position where you're calling it with command and authority, but you're also not, you know, blowing out the microphone, and you're not showing obvious bias in that regard. So he can stand up all he wants, and he can get excited such because he has to wait for me to get my call up. But there are a lot of times where my voice was getting more inflected because there was just so many good moments in that series against High Point. And, you know, it's like Savannah was talking about last week, especially because of the Panthers being a defending conference champion, and they had their star freshman that went over to, I think it was North Carolina State University. Mm-hmm. So they were trying to find sort of their identity and where they were going to go from there. And, you know, but I feel like you guys could have just as easily come out of that series 2-2 or 3-1 in that regard. But the fact that you guys were on the other side of that for 4-0 shows a testament to how your team is. Mm-hmm. So
thank you. Yeah, no, it was fun. I think I kind of expected us to go in there and win it all, but I feel like that's like my job is like I need to have full confidence in our team, and I do. So even though like we knew they were coming in defending champions of their conference, but I think that gave us more motivation to like go out there and be like, well, let's go beat them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So shifting back to the South Carolina series, and we talked about again the idea of wins and losses usually are the highest metric in that regard. The only team that I'm aware of for the Crimson Tide that won that Saturday was the D3 men's team. Shout out to them on beating LSU on Saturday. But certainly, Ben, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about on the odd topic section about that Vanderbilt loss, and we'll get into that that problem. So Preston was not at the games this past weekend.
Oops.
I wasn't trying to roast you on it. I was just being factual. It was a plethora of trying to get the broadcast going and make sure I'm on site and everything. So, and between that and normally, and we talked with Savannah about this last week, where I felt that the biggest challenge, and you even mentioned this earlier, that I felt the biggest challenge the team was going to have was waking up as early as they did in the morning and having to play a game essentially 12 hours later. Mm-hmm. And when we got on site, the game was even delayed at its start. Yeah. So you're already on the bus for however long with breaks and walks, and then having to start a little bit later because the game's going behind. From a captain's standpoint, what was your assessment of the first loss on the year?
First loss of the year, it was definitely tough to swallow, but I'm honestly proud of how we played. I think we definitely did start out a little bit slow, but what can you expect when you woke up at 5 in the morning and then we're on a bus for 8 hours?
It was like 8 hours, yeah.
8 hours, and then just like go right to the rink and try to play. It's definitely tough. And then it was also interesting because Coach Anya had said when they were playing against us, they were doing our forecheck on us. So it was the first time that we had like experienced that, like that kind of pressure. So it's just something to adjust and get used to. I don't want to talk too badly about officiating or anything, but I do think some calls that were made were not great. Mm-hmm. And coaches recognized that, and coaches said that too. So we definitely weren't happy with the loss, but if we were going to take a loss, I would want to take that one. Mm-hmm. It was still a close game, 5-4, mm-hmm. and then the empty netter, which I don't think those count. So it's whatever, but definitely a tough pill to swallow, but also character building. You know, everyone needs a little bit of character development. It was going to have to happen at some point. So,
and from the perch standpoint, or at least from where I was looking down on the ice, I was most impressed with the the comeback, because you look at it was box score about 3-0 at the end of the first, and then 1-1 at so at the end of two, you're at 4-1, mm-hmm. and then you guys outscored them technically. If you don't count the empty netter, you outscored them basically 3-1.
Yeah.
So in that circumstance, you guys were having a comeback about the same time that Bama had against Vanderbilt in the football game and everything. So it felt like there was this Crimson Tide or Frozen Tide spirit that was coming back, but. Yeah, but you know, even not even thinking about what was going to happen from the next game, it's to show that your team's depth has that much grit in them and persistence to come back, especially being out one of your starters too. That was what most impressed me on that Saturday game.
Yeah, no, I was impressed, and I was definitely happy with how we came back. Sometimes you're going to have those slow starts, but I was really happy with how the team responded. Natalie, our goalie, came over and gave us a little bit of a pep talk. Coach Anya, Coach Kevin gave us a pep talk, and I was just really happy with how we responded to be able to come back and score those three goals in the third period. Like, we were going. Like, boys were buzzing. And it was really exciting. Like, we were so close, and I really thought we could, like, pull off the comeback. Like, obviously it sucks that we didn't, but I'm really happy with how the team responded to that.
That's good. What is, I already asked another background conversation, but just to get into not the players, but the coach's head, even as a captain, but any authority's head, what does it look like after the game talking about that night versus talking about it the next time y'all practice?
I'm going to be honest, like the coaches haven't really had much to say, like coming into the locker room. I think I'm not sure what they expected exactly coming into this. They obviously saw in our little unofficial season last year that we went 4-0, but it's our first official season.
Yeah,
it's the inaugural season.
Absolutely.
Nobody knows what to expect. So we've come out here in our first few games, like every single one at the end, they've come in and just been like, that's amazing. You guys played your game. I'm so proud of you. And that's like pretty much what they've had to say. And then we come back in practice and we're like, okay, let's keep it going. Like,
good.
We're going to work on this. And that's kind of been how the season's run.
Yeah, no, they're absolutely incredible. And you can just tell, again, from the audience, from any point of view onto the game, you can see the friendship we already talked about between the players, but also the love and respect and excitement from the coaches. It's all just a great program. That's so brand new.
I almost want to kind of ask, how after such, you know, a big game on the road and after a nice little rest week, you know, you guys are going to go play Auburn here in Pelham. And I kind of want to kind of see what the thought process is going into something like that after being, you know, away from the home for so long.
We're just excited to be back home. I think we're expecting a decent crowd. We're definitely trying to push. It's Auburn. It's ironclad.
Oh, yeah.
Roll Tide, baby. First official Frozen Women's Iron Cup, however you want to put that.
Sure, yeah.
But, so we're excited. I think we're just going in with the same mentality as we always do. I feel like I'm getting, like, repetitive with saying just play our game, but that's how we go into every game. It's like, we know how to play. We know, our level and what we're capable of, and I think that's how we're going to go into this again.
But I think that answer is so consistent because of, like you mentioned, there is absolutely no drama. There is no expectation by any means. You have high standards, but you do not have unhealthy expectation on anybody. It is do your best, and you trust everyone to do their best, and it, again, you have the same, I'm starting repetitive too now, because it's the same answer because of this core that the team is built around.
Yeah.
And the one thing, I do want to make sure that this is mentioned, because we certainly talked a lot about the first loss, because it is significant with first loss in program history and on the season and such. And I remember talking to Coach Davis right after the game, and he mentioned that, you know, it sucks, it's not that fun, but at least the expectation for perfection is off now, so whoever the season goes around. And then the bounce back victory is what I love the most the next day, which you look at the box score on it, 3-0 in favor of the Crimson Tide at the end of the first period, 1-1 second period. So almost mirror, just 180 flipped around from what happened not even 24 hours prior. And then third period, you guys turned it on, a 5-3 advantage to get the final score of 9-4 on there. So yeah, so I think the rest seemed to help a lot, where you were well rested before the game.
Oh, absolutely. Good night's sleep. That Outback dinner after the first game.
Oh, yeah.
That that really helped, you know.
The sound of that hotel air conditioner just helps so much.
Yeah, no, but a good night's rest. It was so fun to come out there. We started off so strong. I think we just flowed from the third period, because you watched the game. I mean, you did the commentary and everything, but you saw our third period in our Saturday game was just so good. We went out and scored 3 goals, and I think we just kind of continued that into, like, the entirety of the game on Sunday, and it was just so fun. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
I think you guys were purposely trying to strain my vocal cords after that day is what was going on. It was just raining goals throughout the entire, because I was the only one calling the game. Like, I tried to put a headset on one of the other camera people, and they were like, no, do not give this to me in any capacity or whatever.
The universe's way to tell Spencer to shh.
Yeah,
oh, of course. Oh, absolutely, of course.
It's okay.
Oh, yeah. And I did also want to talk about, so this past weekend, I know it was unofficial, but Naomi Dirksen, who's a strong defense woman for you guys in the back line, she went down with an injury after the first game, and I remember talking to her, because she and I kind of connect because we're both on doctoral school in our journeys and such, so talking with her about what she was going through, but I know she talked to the trainer, and she was not cleared to play for Saturday. Do we have any official update? Is she out for a few weeks?
No official update yet. I'm not sure if she's coming to practice tonight, but we are hopeful that she will play against Auburn, and that's why she didn't want to play that second game against South Carolina, and I didn't want her to. I don't want her to risk making it worse, so we're just taking it day by day.
But I could see how passionate she was on the bench with the pregame talks, because usually Anya is the one fully getting in and talking about stuff, but I could see from up there Naomi was still trying to help how she could when she couldn't be on the ice and everything. So so how impactful is that? Because I know you have several grad students and others who are upperclassmen on there, but to have somebody who's in doctoral school, who is a little bit more seasoned than, I guess, the rest of the players, how important has she been for you for this team?
She's been a great leader. I feel like she's just been a solid, like, core person. Like, she keeps calm always. And not that people don't, but she's definitely, like, a calming factor, I feel like. Mm-hmm. You know, she's definitely more mature. You can kind of see that maturity level. She's almost 10 years older than some of the girls on the team. But I feel like it adds nice depth to the team, and it's a lot of fun that, like, we can still all get along. Like, there's been no awkwardness with that at all.
Okay.
Everybody gets along, like, great, and she's just been a great figure.
Mm-hmm. And you already touched on this a little bit about the first, you know, Frozen Iron Cup or Iron Bowl, however people look at it in that regard, and hopefully there should be. For those listening to the podcast, we need to come out in the droves to Pelham at the Civic Center and Ice Rink.
Please, I'm begging.
Make sure that we're all coming out there in the crowds to be able to cheer on the Frozen Tide. Oh, yes. We should make some of those. Yeah.
We did that for the men's team last year. We made fat heads of some of the players. No, but if y'all did that for, like, some of us, I think that'd be so funny.
I love that.
Crimson Copies, they make them.
All you need for mine is you just take a photo of mine. Well, you just take a photo of me and put it off of the printer, because it's already a fat head. So, like, mine is already good enough on that regard. So, I don't know if you necessarily feel the same way, because we've talked about being the similar, I guess, big boys, as they're called. But
yeah, I did say that one render they have of us on Instagram kind of makes us look like Frog and Toad a little bit. So, you know.
That was so funny.
Is that, like, your guys' like name now? Like,
they
you talk
about it?
Frog and Toad, call a hockey game.
Car ride. The whole car ride, it was spoken about.
That was the first time I saw that edited image of join our broadcast team, and we have the things are going back and forth.
I thought it was cute.
He showed it to me, and I looked and I said, that's nightmare fuel. And then he did a side-by-side with the Frog and Toad logo, and I'm like,
wait,
this
pull
guy.
It up. I need to see
I was going
to
say, there's like memes by
the
end.
Yeah, it's not on the Instagram story now, but I'd have to look back.
Oh, I screenshotted
it. Okay, so
he's got
it. I thought it was cute.
You guys look so official.
We appreciate it. We still feel Frog and Toad go to therapy. It someday. It someday for the kind of things that regard.
Just come to my house.
Just go to yours.
That's group therapy at our house?
Apparently. I guess
I do. We have bottles of wine and therapy.
Count me in.
Frog leaves Toad at the podcast.
You did that once to me already. Let's not have that again. So, all right, so we didn't discuss this beforehand, but usually on the podcast we like to have an odd topic that we talk about that's beyond the hockey realm and such.
Oh, fun.
And I feel like we all have the same sort of depressive sentiments after the Vanderbilt-Alabama football game. So I don't know if that's the right direction to go in, because I think all of us have
I have
that,
something
so.
To say about it, actually.
Okay. All right,
I have something to say, and it relates actually back to the episode. So let me do some tie-in work right here.
Okay.
I when you were talking about if there's one loss that we're going to take, this is a great loss. I feel the same way. This comes from not only being the biggest Bama fan in the entire world, but also comes straight from my media background, objective view on sports. No, it is not realistic. There's no shot. You have, like she was saying, you have to win. You have to lose at some point. Like we're not going to 12-0 season. It's not, just not going to happen. If we're going to lose, I'm glad it's not to Georgia. I'm glad it's not to Tennessee or a big game. And I'm glad it's not to an absolute nobody. It should be to a nobody on the road that has been upsetting all year. So I'm not. I'm at peace about it. After the game, I turned my phone off. I told Everett, I will not talk about it for 48 hours. Me and Will, one of our other colleagues, we talk sports all day, every day, shut our mouths, did not talk about it. And now I'm ready, and I'm fine. I sort of.
before I tell my stories of like what happened with me for that Vanderbilt game, I'm wondering, because you were basically at home in your apartment, so I'm wondering what your how it went down for you when Vanderbilt got that win.
So I think about midway through the second quarter, I wanted to go get some Domino's pizza because I was like, that's the only way I can make
up. I don't know why the delivery of that is just so funny. Like, midway through the second quarter, time to get Domino's pizza.
It was, man. It was time. So, you know, that morning, I had already missed the team bus to get to Columbia because I sleep a lot. And then,
it's okay, me too.
And then I'm putting on the Vanderbilt game, watching that, and I'm like, what are we doing? So I go to Domino's, pick up a pizza, come back, and between the interception in the beginning, like the pick six that we immediately started off with on offense, and just so many things that went wrong in that game, it was one of those things where I was like, I hope this is not how the Kalen DeBoer era ends, just right here in the beginning, right after beating Georgia.
Sure.
But I do want to agree with you with what you said, because you were like, if there's any game to lose, it's that one. And I do agree, because when you have all of our rivals, you know, with the exception of Auburn for this season, a lot of them are ranked teams, they're road games, and it's like, if you lose, you can start coming up with justifiable excuses.
Right.
You're like, okay, we lost to the number sixth ranked team in the country, boo-hoo, we were so close. They're a good team. It was on the road, one of the best environments in college football. But when you lose to Vandy, there's almost like a nether sense of humbling where it's like, okay,
especially,
yeah.
Especially because Vandy is the number one most made fun of names in college football. Yeah. Just like, yeah. It's just been a running joke for a good reason in the last 15 years. But anyway, I won't get into all of that. But it's been a running joke. And yeah, definitely hits hard, definitely stabs in the chest. But I think so many people are coming after, like, this is the end of the DeBoer era, like, making huge comments like that. I get it, nothing wrong with it, but you're wrong. Yeah. With peace, love, and respect, yeah. Is what I tell to everybody
it's
else. It's like,
games.
This is it, this is over, it is not over.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I will say the DeBoer honeymoon is over.
Yes.
That part of it is over.
Absolutely.
In that regard. And I think
honeymoon's over, relationship's still strong.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, honeymoon's over, and I think this is technically strike one for
yes.
DeBoer, which I think I don't think anybody disagrees with that.
No, he said that verbatim.
I think this is, I think, so when we were, so like during the South Carolina game, you were obviously on the ice.
Yeah, and I didn't have a clue what was happening.
Yeah. Yeah, all the players were on the ice. Maybe somebody on the bench was saying, hey, Vanderbilt's winning or something. I don't know.
No, nothing. Literally, I was clueless.
You guys were all locked in. I was looking at scoring updates while the game was going on. Whenever there was a stoppage on the ice, because I was looking and thanking those who were watching for whatever reason, watching our game over the Vanderbilt Alabama football game. But when we got back on the bus, I had my iPad and I was watching it with, I think it was Noah Kessler, a photographer, and a couple other people who were at the front of the bus. And same deal with you. I probably should have said wait for 48 hours, but I got texts from, like, shout out to one of our colleagues, Riley Chestnut.
Oh my God.
He texted me saying, welcome to the rest of college football.
And
in his defense, when Alabama, he's at a broadcaster at Western Kentucky.
Yes.
So when they when it was towards the third or fourth quarter, I sent him a Roll Tide GIF, and I just left it at that. And he had every right to ream into me for that.
You did it.
So then another colleague of ours, Mackenzie Kane, who's over at Washington Lee, she's like, hashtag go Commodores.
Oh,
I'm like,
my God.
I'm like, you're at a university where they pay their students to go to football games.
Mackenzie can't say
Grand Canyon University.
it's Washington and Lee out in the sticks of nowhere. I think like an hour and a half away from Roanoke.
I think there's probably, how many people are in this room? This many people go to our whole college. So.
And she told us that apparently they were giving out $20 gift cards for their students to get them to go to football.
Really?
That would never happen here.
Please
at the Capitol.
Give me my $20 gift card.
Like, they would give out like free merch or that kind of stuff.
I need my $20 gift card to get my $20 meal.
Imagine paying $20 to go to that. Well, imagine paying $20 to go to that Georgia-Alabama football game. That would have been an absolute steal. But it's, no,
that's how much I paid. Student ticket packages.
I was going to say, me too.
Was it really?
It was $35 for the Georgia ticket.
I paid $35.
Yeah. $35.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I paid that in that regard. But no, it was, it was a tough time. But yeah, the text from colleagues, like one of my other broadcasting bosses called me to talk about some other things. And he said, well, it seems like you, me, and my buddy who's a Bama fan, we're going to need some group therapy, huh? Because he's a Vols fan too.
Oh my God.
So we had a rough one. But I laughed at how, I'm glad they had their moment, but I was surprised that the police escort of all these college kids walking 3 miles down Broadway in Nashville to go dump the goalposts into the Cumberland River.
I mean, let them have their moment.
Oh, sure.
Let them have their moment. Yeah. That's how I feel
it
about that.
It looks like fun. I'm sure they had a great time.
When Tennessee did it, I have some stronger words about that. But Vandy, let them have their moment. This is historical.
Yeah.
It's whatever.
Yeah, and it was just one of those where congratulations to the Commodores. You guys had a better game plan. You guys got it done and everything. That's the one time that I'm going to say that.
I won't say congratulations.
I give credit where credit is due.
They were well coached.
I'm wearing this Sanskrit on me right now. But
that's the one like takeaway I have from the whole thing is like, but you can claim maybe that the batted pick six in the beginning was kind of fluky, but a lot of that game was just perfect coaching. On the other end, we were out-coached bad, especially when it came to their offensive performance to our defense.
Mm-hmm. So, I was gonna say about a counter, but I agree.
So one other odd topic I wanted to ask you all about, because this is kind of a rarity, and we had this in a couple other podcasts, where each of you are from different respective states in that regard. You know, you're from Michigan, the Mitten State. You're technically from South Carolina, where you grew up a little bit. Technically, Alabama, right?
South Carolina was only like the first 6 years of my life, so okay. I tell people I'm from Alabama, okay. So roll tide.
Roll tide, roll. And then Utah, the Salt Lake City side and such, and technically all over the place. So I wanted to ask to see if we have some sort of debate on these things, because I don't know if you've been to any of these other states, but your favorite tourist spot in your home state? And we'll start with you, Kira.
Oh my God, there's so many.
I know.
Michigan's actually so pretty. You guys don't understand Michigan in the summer is
my
favorite.
Well, I'm from Utah, so you don't understand.
Fair. Can I like list off a couple?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. Pretty generic or basic. The Sleeping Bear Sand Dunes on Lake Michigan are actually so fun.
Yeah,
kind of hard to like walk up them, but they're really fun. Anything about like Mackinac City and Mackinac Island is super fun. 5 Mile Bridge connecting the Upper and Lower Peninsula. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, you can make the Upper Peninsula with your hand too.
Oh,
like,
nice.
You know how you make the mitten?
Yeah, it's
a Upper Peninsula.
That's actually pretty clever.
And then one of my favorite places is this place called Presque Isle. It's all the way up in like Lake Superior. It's really pretty, and it's just like this little island out there. It's really nice.
So fun fact, I mean, I have friends over in Grand Rapids, Kalamazoo, and Battle Creek, so over on that west side. So I've been to Grand Haven.
No.
So that same thing in the summer of walking along the pier in the summer. And there's also that, I can't remember the name of it, but there's some famous corn dog stand that like President Obama went to, and it's still like really cheap corn dogs and stuff like that. So that's pretty fun. And I've also been to, I've been through Detroit very briefly of just flying into the airport and coming back and such. But Kalamazoo, that whole area on the west side of Michigan is also pretty special too. So I got to make it up to Mackinac Island at some point.
You should.
Get up
they
to
have really good fudge.
Oh, don't, yeah.
That's what they're known for.
Well, yeah, I've heard the Mackinac fudge and everything. So what about you?
So if you've ever been to Enterprise, Alabama, which is my hometown, then you are probably familiar with the Boll Weevil Monument, which is very famous for being like the only monument erected to represent an insect in the entire world. And that's not what I'm talking about today. What I'm actually talking about today, what I'm actually talking about today is the other boll weevil that's famous in Enterprise, and that would be located at the McDonald's located near Rucker Boulevard. Oh man, do I have a story to tell about that thing. So, so I don't remember what year it was. I want to say it was sometime in the late 2010s. The Enterprise Chamber of Commerce is looking over at Dothan, you know, neighboring city, and they're like, okay, all the local businesses, they have these short little peanut characters that have outfits that resemble the business. So the Krispy Kreme one's got a little donut hat on. He's got a little donut. He's like looking like a little version of the big boy. And Enterprise,
talking about the big boy too.
Enterprise is like, let's do that. That should bring in tourism. And then what they do is they make like hyper-realistic 7-foot tall like boll weevil statues outside of several of the businesses that have, you know, 6 legs and they're just holding various things.
This is actually my favorite thing I've ever heard about in Alabama. So I think you might be right.
It's,
like, yeah.
It is gonna get worse. It is gonna get worse.
You're only convincing me to go even more.
So they outside of the McDonald's just recently in the last year or so, they put one of these boll weevils out there and it is designed to look like Ronald McDonald. Okay. And it has the red wig, it's got a hooked clown nose, and it's basically the 6-legged clown demon standing outside of McDonald's. And it went viral on TikTok to the point where I remember, you know, it was talking about, you know, things you see in Enterprise, Alabama, and it had that SpongeBob audio over it where it's like, what? It's just an ordinary Krabby. Oh my goodness! And it showed the picture of the weevil, and all the comments were like, dear God almighty.
Preston, I gotta be honest. You sound like you work for the Enterprise Chamber of Commerce. Because that's,
that,
that, if
that
there
was
is
the best thing you've ever heard. Guys, road trip?
It, no, yeah. Actually, let's go. Team trip.
If broadcasting doesn't work out, you have a career in sales, my friend.
No, literally. I'm crying.
All right, Salt Lake City.
Okay, I am just, it's so hard. The thing I love about living in Salt Lake City is the views are from I-15. I live in the suburbs, so right in the city, or right in like the, where it's populated, and the city is on the mountain. Like it is, I'm 10 minutes, like it is gorgeous. But I'm gonna pick one southern and one northern. In the southern half of Utah, where you see all of the desert, I just am gonna have to go with, it's the most basic, it's the most popular for a reason, Zion National Park. Mm. If you guys don't know, we have 5 national parks in Utah. 5 full national parks, and they are all unique and beautiful, and Zion is the coolest place. If you have not, it is the coolest place you can ever go. Even if you don't like hiking or if you're not outdoorsy, it is just like a place you can like stand and stare and stay forever, and it's so dope. And then northern, I have to pick a northern one too because I grew up literally in the Rocky Mountains.
Oh yeah.
And that's hard because if I were gonna give a tourist spot to stop in northern Utah, it would be drive up the Rocky Mountains and stop somewhere. And that is kind of the tourism of Utah, is all of it. It's kind of dope, so.
I'm sure there's plenty of places where you can stop and just look out of the mountainside.
Oh, just literally any, you know, exact anywhere you drive, you can stop anywhere and have the best view you've ever seen in your life. And it'll be different every single day. Every 10 feet you drive, it's different. It is the coolest place ever. I cannot rant enough.
Now, you were talking about earlier, your house is a therapy place because of wine. Full disclosure, all of us at this table are 21, so or older, so drink responsibly
and legally, and safely, kids.
Illegally, huh?
I said legally, but anyways, so I'm a bourbon guy.
Are we getting into our favorite drinks?
We can. So, look, here's the thing. So I'm a bourbon guy, and I grew up in mostly south of Nashville in Franklin, about an hour and 10-minute drive from the Jack Daniel's distillery. And if you're ever visiting in Nashville, from there, it's about an hour and a half, almost 2 hours. Highly worth the drive out there because they actually, it's one of the few distilleries where they actually take you fully through the factory. They show you the full process and how they actually make it. And you also, if you pay a certain amount for like some of their tasting tours, you can taste some of the Jack Daniel's
flight. That's cool. I'm driving through that way soon. I'm going to have to make a little stop.
Oh yeah, Lynchburg's great. It's they have the only traffic light in the county in the city.
It's one of those where
you walk from the distillery across the bridge and they have downtown, they have the general store and restaurants and local stuff. So Lynchburg is just, I love that small town feel.
Yeah.
Like I love being able to just look around and see like kind of the mountains and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's pretty good. And of course, I mean, Nashville is now the place to be. I don't know. Have all of you been to Nashville at some point? Yeah. I can't remember if you said you haven't been to Nashville. Mm-hmm. You've been to Nashville.
I've been.
Okay, yeah. So we gotta do it. So we got a road trip that we gotta go up to Michigan, apparently. We gotta go up to Nashville. We gotta go to, like, probably to Salt Lake or some other place. But, you know, I think the next road trip is Tampa for the women's team. So they gotta get to there first. If it's also huge praise to all the first responders and everyone who's going to be trying to help with the double hurricanes that are about to come through Florida in that regard. We're wishing all our best, as well as to our friends over at the University of Tampa who are with the women's hockey team and everybody else around that area. We're wishing them the best in that regard. We're hoping that it won't be as devastating as previous hurricanes in that sort of regard. At least podcast-wise, we had a good odd topic session. Oh, I think we had good stuff. But Kira, thank you for joining us. Yeah, I think it was a great conversation.
Thank you so much, guys.
And certainly, we see the work you put in behind the scenes and on the ice, and it's certainly paying off in that regard. And hopefully, as the rest of the season goes on, the goal is much closer and more attainable in terms of the not just a championship for College Hockey South, but also the goal of going to nationals and bringing it home in the first season for the Frozen Tide. So we appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, okay.
Good. And I just want to leave you with, like, you and all the other women. You guys are doing incredible things. Yeah. We love watching you. We love working with you. But also, you're very inspiring to all of any other woman that's trying to work hard at anything. So we love to watch it.
I love you guys.
Absolutely.
Big hearts. Yeah,
very mutual. Any final thoughts, Preston, before we close out this episode of The Frozen Hour?
Baba Booey.
For you.
I guess that's now a trend where you have to say it at the start or the beginning or something like
Jesus.
That. So that's going to wrap up episode 3 of the Alabama Frozen Hour. Roll Tide, roll.
I wasn't very professional.
We'll probably have some sort of special guest later on in the next episode or something along those lines. But for Kira Duffany, for Kate Aitchison, for Preston McElhaney, as well as Annie Sukalis, our producer, all the hardworking men and women that make this run so smoothly. I'm Spencer Thompson saying so long from Reese Pfeiffer Hall. Episode 3 in the books for Alabama's Frozen Hour.
Boom.